Mic test? Good deal. We'll begin with a word of prayer. Most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity of life. Thank you for the opportunity I have this morning to speak to these people. I ask that they receive these words in the spirit that I hope to deliver and that they find something useful. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. It's an honor to speak this morning. Shortly after John announced that I was going to speak, it became a question at my house from my wife. She says, well, have you picked a topic? I said, well, I'm working on a few things, but I'll come up with something. And as the week grew on, she asked me again, she says, have you picked a topic? And I said, yes, I have. And she curiously asked me what it was, and I says, I'm going to speak on communication. And her response was very simple. It was, Now, those of us that have been married long enough recognize that is not a phrase, it's not a word. It is, in fact, a complete sentence. It has everything. It has a subject, a verb, a noun, a pronoun, an adjective, an adverb, present, past, and dangling participles. It's got it all. And I knew exactly what she meant. But I had the urge to ask a question. I was sort of like the people that Bill Engle talks about. Like if you went out in the parking lot and somebody's putting their little spare tire on their car and you walk by, you can't help yourself. You say, did you have a flat? And they say, no. I'm just trying the spare tire on. Be sure it fits. If it works out, I'm going to try it on the other three as soon as I get through. I knew the answer to the question, but I could not help myself. And although I've advised my son-in-law many times, Jesse, do not ask a question that you already know the answer to. I asked the question. And you know what's coming. Well, what do you mean by? Her response was, well, sweetheart. Now, if you've been married very long, you know that the phrase, well, sweetheart, is not followed by compliments. Instead, it's followed by criticisms. And she says, well, sweetheart, communication is not your strong suit. I was offended. Okay, because I am a great communicator. So I said, wait a minute. No, I didn't say wait a minute because it's important. I said, wait a cotton picking minute. I don't know what cotton picking minute is compared to a minute, but when it's important, you say cotton picking minute. So I said, wait a cotton picking minute. Watch me with my horses. I lead my horse to the trailer. I don't say get in. All I say is, that's it. And the horse, boom, in the trailer. I ride that horse. I ride that horse down a trail. He follows the trail. If we come to a split in the trail, I don't have to use neck rein to turn him which way I want to go. I don't use leg pressure to make him go left or right. I just think in my head, I want you to go this way. And you know that horse is going to go that way? That's because we communicating. All right, we got it going on. And she says, Charlotte says, well, but, you heard that phrase before? I'm the butt preacher, right? I did it right here. I told the butt joke. She's not going to honey butt me. So I cut her off right there. I said, no, sweetheart, I'm not through. You're going to listen to me a little more because I have dogs. And my dogs and me communicate very well. If I say to my dog, here to me, it doesn't matter if that dog is chasing an armadillo, a rabbit, or whatever else it is. It doesn't matter if he's after a cow. When I say here to me, that dog's going to stop and he's going to come right here. Here to me. If I say, walk him up. then that dog's going to go behind that cow and he's going to move behind him and walk him up. If that dog is in bed with us and trying to steal Charlotte's snack, and I say down, that dog is going to collapse on her chest, may knock her wind out, but he's going to lay down right there. That's because I am a great communicator. Me and them dogs communicate. And now it's her turn to respond. And she says, really? She says, with spurs and a shocking collar. I guess so. So I took her advice and I brought my spurs. I brought my transmitter. I brought my shocking collar. I just need Eli to come up here and I'll put this on him. And I will demonstrate how I can communicate. But I did take her advice. I recognized my shortcomings. So I changed my topic. And the topic is failure to communicate. And on that subject, she agreed that I am an undisputed expert. There was a movie in 1967 starring Paul Newman and George Kennedy. The movie was entitled Cool Hand Luke. Show of hands, how many people in the audience have seen Cool Hand Luke? Very good. Very good. Oh, that's neat. Y'all are doing good back there, by the way. Cool Hand Luke, he got his name from a card game. The cards are displayed right up there. And if you look at those cards, I don't know if you can see what they are, but in a hand of poker, it's nothing. It's nothing. And he ran a bluff, and he just kept raising the pot, till the other guy finally folded. And Luke announced that sometimes, after he'd won the hand, sometimes nothing is a pretty cool hand. And so he was called Cool Hand Luke. But in the movie, he would gain the confidence of the guards, and then he would escape. And they would bring him back. And they would bring him back beaten and battered. And then the warden would appear. And the famous line in the movie is, what we have here is a failure to communicate. Effective communication is the successful and accurate conveying of information or ideas between two parties. It has to be sent and it has to be received. And those two things have to be the same for it to be effective communication. Everything else that can happen, everything else is a failure to communicate. That's never more evident, I think, in business than in the buying and selling of horses and cattle. The cattle industry lives in the illusion that they have a few honest people left. In the horse business, it's called horse trading, and a deal's a deal. Make no illusions about it. So much to the fact that there's a poem written by Sonny Hancock entitled, A Deal's a Deal. And it goes like this. I traded for a horse one time. He wouldn't take no beauty prize. A great big long-eared blue roan gelding. Not too bad for waiter size. I had to make some tough old circles. And this trader guaranteed this horse would show me lots of country and not need too much rest or feed. He said, now this here ain't no kid horse, but he'll pack you up the crick. He will bump you on some occasion and he has been known to kick. I wouldn't trade him just to anyone without having some remorse. But if you're a sure enough cowpuncher, mister, he's your kind of horse. I stepped on that horse next morning. He began to buck and brawl. And that trader hadn't lied none, but he hadn't told it all. Because we sure tore up the country where he throwed that equine fit, and I almost ran out of handholds by the time he finally quit. I guess that must have set a pattern. Things never seem to change although I showed him lots of country, every corner of the range. But every time I'd ride that booger, why, he'd keep me sitting tight. I knew I'd make at least 3 bronc rides before he packed me home that night. Which would have been okay with lots of horses that I knowed, but that old pony had my number and I just barely get him rode. The thing that really spooked me and put a damper on my pride was that horse was learning how to buck faster than I was learning how to ride. I pulled into camp one evening. It was getting pretty late. I see this gray horse in the corral and there's a saddle by the gate. I looked that gray horse over and I sure liked what I seen. Then this kid showed up around the barn. He must have been about 16. He said he'd lame that gray that morning coming off the granite grade, and he wondered if I had a horse that maybe I'd like to trade. He said he didn't have time to stop and rest him and let him heal, and since that beggars can't be choosers, he'd make most any kind of deal. When a feller's trading horses, why, most anything is fair. So I traded him that blue roan for his gray horse then and there. But then my conscience started hurting when I thought of what I did to trade a fly-by-night dink like that to some little wet-nosed kid. Well, I tells him, So next morning after breakfast, I tell him, listen, lad, if you want to know the truth, that trade you made last night was bad. That old blue horse is a tough one, bad as any you'll see. He'll kick you, strike you, stampede you. He's as sorry as you see. It's all I can do to ride him, and I'll tell it to you straight. I think you'll be awfully lucky just to ride him to the gate. There's 2 or 3 old horses out there in the saddle bunch. They ain't got too much going for them, but I think I got a hunch. They'll get you where you're going if you don't crowd them none. But boy, I hate to see you ride that blue roan booger, son. He said, I told you there last night I'd make most any kind of trade, and I appreciate you telling me what a bad mistake I made. But my old daddy told me, son, when you're trading, that it's no matter how you feel, even if you take a whipping, boy, a deal is still a deal. That horse you say has lots of travel, and he's not too bad for speed. Well, sir, I'm kind of in a tight, and that's exactly what I need. I traded for him fair and square, and blame his blue road hide. When I pull out of here this morning, that's the horse I'm going to ride. I watched him clenching up his saddle, and he pulled his hat down, way down, stepped right up to the rigging like he's headed straight for town. Stuck both spurs up in his shoulder and got that blue roan hair a-flying, tipped his head back straight and screamed just like a hungry mountain lion. You know, I've heard lots of stories about the bucking horse ballet. I've heard of poetry in motion, but the ride I saw that day just plumb defied description, though I can see it plain like it had happened in slow motion. It was branded on my brain. I don't suppose I could explain it to you even if I tried. The only thing that I can say is by the saints that kid could ride. He sat there plumb relaxed like he was lying home in bed, and every jump that pony made, that kid was half a jump ahead. When it was over, I decided I could learn a few things still, and I said, son, I'm awfully sorry that I misjudged your riding skills. He said, shucks, that's okay, mister, as he started on his way. But if you think this horse can buck, don't put your saddle on that gray. What they had was a failure to communicate, at least timely. You know, George Strait says that you got to have an ace in the hole. Well, me and Jesse have an ace. We have an ace. It looks like that. It's an overgrown four-wheeler with a steering wheel and a foot pedal instead of a throttle handle. And I asked one of our workers, I had a spray tank on it, and I asked him to go around the fields and spray some indigo weeds because they're tall, green, and ugly. It seemed like a simple task. But you see, as he approached this right here, this is the trail on the outside levee. The rise is to the right, and it's a creek to the left. very steep bank. As I approach that, I come by there every day. You have a choice. You can take the trail, you can veer to the right and go off in the water, or you can turn around and go back around the other way. I saw three choices. I was not aware of choice number four. My young man comes to this spot and he looks at that and he says, well, I don't like one and two, and I don't have time for three. So he has option four. And his option four is that he will get out of the vehicle. He will stand on the left side and take his shovel handle and mash the accelerator while walking beside it and holding the steering wheel. What could possibly go wrong? Well, if you look in this picture slightly to the left, you see that the Acer is in fact an ace in the hole. The bike rolled over on top of him. And he slid underneath the bike all the way to the bottom. He's in the bottom, he's in the water. The fall broke his phone. He thinks his leg is broke. So he actually crawled out of that hole. He didn't drown. And he crawled somewhere between a quarter and a half a mile back to the pickup because he thought his leg was broke. His leg was not broke. It was badly bruised. And you look at that and you wonder, how and why could all of that happen? And I have to tell you, I have to share this with you because this is important. The idea of standing beside the vehicle and operating the throttle with the shovel was not his original thought. He got that from Jesse Ovard. Jesse Ovard had demonstrated that maneuver, but didn't tell him not to do it. What we had there was a failure to communicate. Came to pass several years ago, I had a bull. Not that bull, but when that bull was healthy, he looked like that. I put that up there, you can see how big he is. He weighs about, right there, he weighs north of 2,000 pounds. Okay, he's a big Charolais bull. At the time this story takes place, the bull was injured. He had disappeared off to the timber and was hiding. They'll do that when they get hurt. He was in hiding all by himself. I figured out where I thought he was, and I went to look for him. I was riding my oldest horse, and I had two dogs with me. I had Skipper and Spur. Skipper was my main wheel, all right? So I find where the bull is, and he's in the brush, and I use my word. I say, hunt him up. Skipper goes in there, bites the bull on his sore foot, and the bull comes out. Everything's working perfect. The dog's doing just what I say. He goes when I say go. He gets off when I say get off. And we take the bull, and very gently, we walk that bull out of the timber into the clearing. It's as good as it gets. I'm horseback. My dogs are working. The bull is going. It don't get no better. We take the bull by the water trough. We let him get a drink. We don't crowd him none. He's doing what we ask. Every time he stops and looks at me, I just say, Skipper, watch him. And Skipper runs by and he bites him on the foot of the nose. Okay, so his nose is bleeding a little bit, but that's okay. The nose is a long ways from the heart and he'll get over it. But we reach a point, kind of the critical point of where we're going to either, he's either going to go on to the pens or not. Okay? And I'm on my oldest horse. Skipper takes a break. He's not supposed to do that. But Skipper goes to the water trough to get him a drink. It's hot. Okay? He just took a break. He didn't tell me he was taking a break. But he did. And the bull turned to go the wrong way. So Skipper's not there, I can't send him. So I take my horse and I block the path. And at this point, there is a failure to communicate. Because the bull has said, leave me alone. And I've said, go on to the pen. Well, there was a miracle that day. God reached down, or somebody reached down. This bull was walking like this. He would put this back foot forward, and he would kind of wiggle it, be sure it was right. And that's it. Then he'd take that foot again. Like that. That's the way the bull had been. We'd come over half a mile. He hadn't taken a step faster than that the whole time. But suddenly, the pain in his leg was gone. He come at that horse with a speed I'd never seen. Run his head up under that horse, picked us up to an elevation you could see for a long ways. I was up there. Yeah, it was a pretty sight. But when we come down, the horse's feet are towards the bull. I'm still square in the saddle, got both stirrups. And the bull is sliding us down the road. Okay? We had a failure to communicate. I should have never put that horse in that position. But the bull pushed us down the road. Eventually, he stopped. Eventually, the horse stands up. Doesn't panic. Foot still in the stirrup. Wiggle the foot to get it out. Okay, we get away from the bull. And the dog suddenly returned. And I don't know how many of y'all speak dog, but the dog said, I think we should leave him alone. That's what the dog said. And I thought the dog was right. So we gathered our stuff up, and I go get the pickup, and I come back to the bull. Got the horse in the trailer, dogs in the pickup, because the dogs ride in the pickup. That's where the dog should ride. My dogs, anyway. And the bull is still in the road. I was irritated. I kind of looked at that bull, and I sent him a message. I said, you need to move off of this road. He didn't get the message. I was about 10 yards from the bull, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I took my right foot and I raised it up. And on that Dodge Ram 250 diesel pickup, I stomped that pedal to the floor and I held it right there. Bam! I hit that bull. And he still didn't move. So I backed up and gave him the message again. He did eventually get the message. But there was a second failure to communicate. I wanted him to move. And that's an embarrassing thing. Do you think I proved anything to that bull? He walked off thinking, boy, that guy's really smart. You know, I don't know. That didn't happen. But there was a failure to communicate. I don't know how many of y'all have experienced a failure to communicate. At your job, at your work, at your church. Always remember, people confuse communication with words. And words are a very small part of communication. According to Psychology Today, they would say that 55% of what you say is body language, 38% is face, facial expressions, and only 7% is the actual spoken word. I want you to remember that you're always communicating, whether you think you are or not. Always. You're always giving off vibes. The way you walk across the parking lot, the way you dismiss yourself from church today, everything is communication, whether you say it or not. And oftentimes, so often, the wrong thing is received. The wrong message is received in communication. You think somebody sent you something that they didn't really send. I want to close with James chapter 1, verse 19 and 20. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. If you want to be a great communicator, the first thing you got to learn to do, listen. It starts with the listen. If there's some way that the church can be of service to you this morning, I ask that you come forward. We'll be glad to pray with you. I appreciate your kind attendance so much this morning. And if there's anything that I can do to help you as your elder, man, call me. All right? Let's stand and sing. Thank you.